From WBUR Boston and NPR, I'm Jane Clayson in for Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. The biggest battle against ISIS in Iraq is underway in Mosul. Iraq's second largest city was captured in the summer of 2014. Since then, ISIS has suffered a string of defeats, and Mosul is its last major urban bastion in Iraq. U.S. troops are taking a back seat to Iraqi forces whom they've trained for the last 2 years. Are Iraqis up to the job? Will ISIS retreat and retaliate? This hour on Point, the battle to take back Mosul. You can join us on air or online. Do you understand how high the stakes are here? What role should the U.S. play in this offensive? Joining me now from Qayyarah Air Base, just south of Mosul, Iraq, is Richard Engel. He is chief foreign correspondent for NBC News and the only American journalist inside the airbase. Richard, welcome to On Point. Wonderful to have you.
Well, thank you. It's great to be here and happy to talk to you. Just for clarity, I've been at that airbase for a long time. I'm actually not sitting on the airbase right now. We just left it, but we do plan to go back soon. But that's where we've spent the last several days.
Ah, very good. Thank you. Explain to us first here why Mosul is so critical in the fight against ISIS.
Well, Mosul is a huge urban area. It was where ISIS really cut its teeth. It's where ISIS became famous. ISIS has been around for more than 2.5 years, but we first started hearing about it when the group took Mosul. A relatively small number of ISIS fighters managed to push out the Iraqi army, which collapsed in a humiliating defeat and retreat, left behind its weapons, and then the group took all of these weapons, used them to spread its power, and it was in Mosul where the leader of ISIS, al-Baghdadi, declared the establishment of an Islamic State or a caliphate. So for the group, it has tremendous historic resonance. It has a tremendous amount of prestige. As you mentioned, it's the biggest urban center. So if they lose this, one could argue, as an American general told me the other day, that if they lose this, they lose their caliphate. They lose their state in Iraq, at least.
So what is the official role of the Americans in this military offensive, Richard?
Well, the Americans are going to great lengths to say that they're doing very little. I don't entirely believe that. I think they're doing a great deal. They are not kicking down doors. They are not leading the charge. They're not actually at the tip of the spear. But they are playing a huge role with airstrikes, with artillery, with planning, with providing some intelligence. And frankly, maybe the most important role is trying to pull together all of these different forces that are taking part. This offensive is being launched by the Iraqi military. It's being launched by the Kurds. The Iraqi military and the Kurds haven't always seen eye to eye.
Mm-hmm.
After all, the Kurds want to establish their own state in northern Iraq, which is not the objective, of course, of the Iraqi military, which thinks its objective is to control all of Iraq. And there is a little talked about role of Shiite militias in this, which is a complicating factor when you're talking about trying to push ISIS out of Sunni areas. So the Americans have a military role, and I think they also have a unifying role, trying to corral all of these different forces together into a single cohesive body so that you don't have the catastrophic collapse like we did 2.5 years ago when ISIS took over Mosul. Mm-hmm.
On Monday, Iraq's prime minister announced the beginning of this operation to clear Mosul of ISIS militants on state television. My dear people, dear sons of Mosul, the hour of victory has come, he says. The operation to liberate Mosul has started. Today I declare the start of the heroic operations to liberate you from Daesh. Richard Engel, speak to the timing of this offensive. Why now?
Well, it depends on how cynical you want to be. This offensive is long delayed. This offensive could have started months and months ago. We've been talking about it in the media for at least 6 months. Was it coming? When was it going to happen? And so one could say it was overdue. One could say that it was about time. or one could say that this was a final act of the Obama administration, that the Obama administration wanted to make sure that this got done while President Obama was still in office. This is a signature part of the war on ISIS. The loss of northern Iraq and the loss of huge parts of Syria to ISIS is probably the biggest black stain on President Obama's foreign policy. If he can go out showing that the Americans did manage to regain parts of Iraq, did manage to push ISIS out of its biggest stronghold, did manage to destroy the ISIS caliphate in Iraq, at least, that would be a foreign policy accomplishment for a president that I think recognizes the rise of ISIS is probably the thing he'll have to answer for most in history.
We've heard that in the last 2 years that ISIS has controlled Mosul, that they've been preparing their defenses for this moment, digging tunnels, planting IEDs, even filling trenches with oil to burn for cover from airstrikes. I'm reading a story here in Reuters that says the United States expects and is preparing for ISIS to use crude chemical weapons in this offensive. What do you know about all this, and do you expect ISIS militants to put up a bitter fight?
Well, I know that they are preparing for the worst. When I interviewed that one of the top American generals the other day, I asked him about this. I said, what about chemical weapons? And he touched his thigh where he was wearing a chemical protective kit, and he said, we're prepared for the worst. So clearly they are expecting that they could use chlorine gas. They have used chlorine gas in the past, even before ISIS was born, when it was al-Qaeda in Iraq. The precursor group, the group used crude chlorine gas attacks many times. Chlorine gas used the way ISIS does it generally doesn't kill you, but it can cause a lot of panic. It can cause a lot of fear. It can cause a lot of respiratory trauma. Mm-hmm. So that is only one of the possibilities. There's also the there's possibility of booby-trapped roads, booby-trapped houses, using people as human shields. When you talk about ISIS, the list of horrors that the group is willing to perpetrate is almost limitless. This is the group that surpassed al-Qaeda with its brutality. But the question is, how many of them are going to stick around to actually fight? The estimates are 3,000 to 5,000 that are in there. Some estimates put it at 7,000 that I've seen as well. But will the average Iraqi ISIS member decide that it's worth it when they actually are facing a serious confrontation? Will it just be the foreign fighters who are sticking around, or will they try and leave too? Today, in fact, a European official warned that some foreign fighters might be trying to make their way back to Europe, so that Europe should be prepared for that. So, frankly, we won't know until the Iraqi forces get there what they have in mind. But if you're talking about ISIS and you're talking about several thousand at least, yes, one should expect that they have something dastardly in plan.
Here is Major General Gary Valesky, whom you referred to, whom you interviewed, voicing his concern that in retaliation for the fall of Mosul, ISIS forces will carry out attacks on Western countries.
You know, from my perspective back at home, is when Mosul falls, you know, how are they going to try to deflect the attention?
So, Richard Engel, you know, you hear these U.S. military commanders saying and warning that ISIS might up their game with more attacks elsewhere, possibly in the U.S.
That interview you just played with, so that was the conversation that I had with the general. And I asked him specifically. I said, ISIS has attacked in Nice, in Paris, in Brussels, either directed or inspired. Do you think they're going to do more of this? And what happens if they lose Mosul? And he said that is a major concern, that ISIS gains so much prestige by holding Mosul. ISIS is really a vain organization. It's brutal, but it's also incredibly vain. It doesn't like its reputation being hurt. So if its brand is tarnished and its crown jewel, ISIS is called Mosul, its crown jewel. If that crown jewel is stripped away from it, I think it is possible, and certainly the general thought it was possible and said it was a concern, that the group tries to compensate and tries to show its supporters all over the world that it's just as tough as ever and just as deadly and just as dangerous by carrying out some sort of attack elsewhere.
Yesterday, President Obama met with the Italian Prime Minister Matteo Renzi at the White House, where he thanked the Prime Minister for Italy's role in fighting ISIS or ISIL and spoke about the ongoing battle in Mosul.
Mosul will be a difficult fight, and there will be advances and there will be setbacks, but I am confident that just as ISIL has been defeated in communities across Iraq, ISIL will be defeated in Mosul as well, and that will be another step towards their ultimate destruction.
So, Richard Engel, how do you see this going? Can the same Iraqi military that lost Mosul to ISIS now win it back?
Yeah, probably. But the question is, do they win the battle and lose the war? And this is a bigger question, I think, that Iraq is going to have to answer with. Can this overwhelming coalition force with U.S. air power, with American commanders on the ground advising them, with Kurdish participation, take back Mosul and drive out several thousand fighters? Yes, I think they can, and I think they will. Whether it takes 3 weeks or 3 months, I think eventually it will happen. It's unclear how much damage will be done to the city, how many booby traps ISIS has laid, what's going to happen to the million people who are in between. How costly it will be, I think, is the open question. But yes, I think it probably will happen. Will this mean that you're going to have stability in northern Iraq? Will it mean that the problem, the sectarian tensions that led to the rise of ISIS are going to be wiped out? I don't think so. I think you could have them win this battle and long-term lose the war.
Richard Engel is chief foreign correspondent for NBC News. He spoke with me from just outside Mosul. Richard, thank you so much.
Absolutely. Good to talk to you.
Thank you. We're talking about the fighting inside Iraq to take back Mosul from the Islamic State, and you can join the conversation. Are you hopeful that this offensive will deal a death blow to ISIS? I'm Jane Clayson, in for Tom Ashbrook. More after this break. This is On Point. This is On Point. I'm Jane Clayson, and for Tom Ashbrook, you're listening to Kurdish Peshmerga fighters running through crossfire during the offensive to reclaim Mosul from ISIS. We're talking about that this hour, the last stronghold for ISIS in Iraq, Mosul. You can join the conversation. After so many military setbacks, do you think the West and the Iraqi government are ready to do this right? Are you worried about how Turkey and Iran might angle from some sort of advantage here? Before I introduce my guests, here's CNN's Nick Patton-Walsh in a village on the outskirts of Mosul describing a battle between the Iraq-led team and ISIS.
This is the first village they come across. They move down the road towards Mosul, and they're encountering pretty heavy resistance. Returning fire with what they have.
Joining me now from Washington, Ruel Mark Gerecht. He's senior fellow at the Foundation for Defense of Democracies and a former CIA case officer focused primarily on the Middle East. Ruel, welcome back to On Point. Great to have you.
My pleasure, Jen.
And from Rome, Italy, is Maria Fantapi. She is Iraq's senior analyst for the International Crisis Group. Maria, welcome to you as well.
Thank you for having me.
I'll start with you, Maria. Since the Iraqi-led military surrendered Mosul to ISIS in 2014, it's been a stronghold for ISIS, both strategically and symbolically, as an Islamic caliphate. To your mind, what is the significance of this fight underway right now?
Well, there is so much at stake, really, and it's not just about breaking and crashing the symbolic stronghold of ISIL. I think it's what is at stake is really that each of the players that are going to participate to this campaign has something to win and something to lose. In the first place, as we mentioned before, the United States. I mean, for them, if they will win this campaign, it will be a big achievement for the Obama administration. Mm-hmm. But on the other hand, you have each one of the Iraqi and regional players which wants something. I mean, the Kurds, on the one hand, you have the party of Masoud Barzani, the president of the Iraqi Kurdistan region, who absolutely wants to have control over some of the disputed territory which are just beside the Iraqi Kurdistan region, which are mixed populated. And then you have also the Iraqi government of Haider al-Abadi, and for him also it's a big what is at stake. It's really its legitimacy, because he has still to in a way consolidate his legitimacy, and he has a lot of rival in Baghdad, especially the former prime minister Nouri al-Maliki, who also has its own affiliated militia deployed on the outskirts of Mosul.
So, Ruel, talk about this. These Iraqi forces, all of them, and the different factions, are they ready for this, Ruel? I mean, why this offensive now? Are they ready to move in and do this right?
Well, I think that the
Let me ask Ruel that question, Maria, and I'll get back to you in a minute. Ruel, go ahead.
Well, I think they're probably ready to do it. Whether they're ready to do it right is a different question. I mean, I think they, in part, they've been waiting for months because certainly the Americans did not believe the Iraqi army was up to this battle. It may not be up to this battle still. They did not want to have a heavy participation of the Iraqi Shiite militias. There's a sea of those militias in Iraq, many of them supported by the Iranians. I think it's inevitable, unless we get very lucky in Mosul, that those militias are going to play a part in this. So there's been a great deal of anxiety that once you hit that town, that this coalition could come apart, that you could have to use a lot of heavy weaponry to take back Mosul, particularly artillery. You could have high civilian casualty rates, and it could turn into a giant mess. And that the one of the objectives of defeating, obviously, the Islamic State in Mosul is that you deny them their role as being a Iraqi Arab Sunni revanchist movement. I think you always need to remember that the Islamic State originally started out as at its core as Iraqi Arab Sunnis who were trying to get even with the Shia. So all of these themes are coming together here, and they could all fall apart.
So civilians are still in Mosul, up to a million or more of them. At a press conference on Tuesday, a reporter asked President Obama about his plan to resolve the potential humanitarian crisis in the aftermath of Mosul. President Obama said the U.S. government and U.N. coalition forces put tremendous effort to prepare themselves for such a crisis.
If we aren't successful in helping ordinary people as they're fleeing from ISIL, then that makes us vulnerable to seeing ISIL return and feeding on the resentments. And so there's a strategic as well as humanitarian interest in us getting that right.
Huge humanitarian interest, Ruel. Mark Garrett, I mean, how do you see that? And what is being done to protect these civilians?
Well, I mean, I don't think they're going to be able to do a lot on that score. Obviously, the Americans are going to resist using their air power and artillery in ways that are going to increase civilian casualties. But if we discover that the Islamic State combatants are going to hold firm, they're going to be tenacious, they're going to fight to die, then you are going to have to bring in heavy artillery and use it quite extensively. So the potential here for a civilian mess is pretty high, and I don't think the Iraqi forces or the Kurdish forces can handle that. And certainly the United States, because it has so few troops in Iraq, is not in a position to really intervene in any effective way.
Maria Fantapi, do you foresee ISIS holding onto Mosul at all costs, fighting down to the last man, or do you anticipate ISIS fighters fleeing, regrouping, moving on, retaliating in another way?
Well, I think that one of the possibilities we have to think through is whether ISIL fighters, they will actually mine the place in order to delay as much as possible the capture of Mosul. I mean, this has been actually the scenario in other cities that have been taken from ISIL. So they mine the territory, so they don't stay within the city, but they retard the takeover of the city. And this sparks in my mind like one idea, which is that any counterterrorism strategy at this point really should not just focus on defeating ISIL militarily, but also anticipating the way that ISIL might regenerate itself, recreate, reinvent its image. and also reorganize somewhere else in other form, because we have seen that in 2006 and 5, at that moment, they were Al-Qaeda was in a certain shape, and then its strength was truly that one of regrouping somewhere in the desert between Iraq and Syria, and then rethink another way of dealing with the local population, another image, another way of using the media. So we really have to anticipate the next step in order to be successful.
So what about what about that, Ruel? The possibility, as Maria says here, of ISIS regenerating itself, reorganizing somewhere else?
Oh, I think that's real. I mean, whether they have learned any lessons from their occupation of Mosul, I don't know. I mean, we will discover whether the Iraqi Arab Sunni community has been so outraged by their oppressive puritanical behavior that they want no part of them in the future. But certainly, again, because this group is Iraqi Arab Sunni at its core, it won't give up. I think it will try to rally Iraqi Sunnis to their cause. And if the Shia misbehave and treat the Arab Sunnis of Mosul in a brutal fashion, either during the battle or after the battle, then I think there will certainly be terrain for them to recapture, and perhaps easily.
A lot of listeners want to get in on this conversation. Let's get some in here. Abdullah is first, calling from Boston. Abdullah, you're on the air. Welcome.
Thank you for calling my. Thank you for accepting my call.
You're welcome. Go ahead.
I have one comment and one question.
Okay.
My comment is the code of the ISIS. We know they began from the Arab mistreating and Sunni not allowing to investigate the government. And we didn't do as American as anything to help to the Arabs to get back to the shared faith. And we're supporting the Shiite government, which is killing and destroying and looting the homes of Sunnis.
Uh-huh.
So unless we get this problem and fix it, ISIS, they might change the name, or they became another name, or became another group.
I get it. Abdullah, thank you very much. Glad you called. Let's go to Dan in Black River Falls, Wisconsin. Hi, Dan. You're on the air. Welcome.
Hi, Jane.
Hi.
I'm a veteran of Operation Iraqi Freedom, which is unfortunately named. But there's a saying that amateurs talk tactics and professionals talk logistics. I'm also a news junkie, and it sounds like inefficient state of the Iraqi central government is really causing some problems for getting resources and equipment out in to the troops effectively, particularly the Kurdish Peshmerga, which seem like they're the only troops that are having much luck against ISIS.
Mm-hmm.
So I was just curious as to the group's opinion as to whether or not the government could hold up a victory that was achieved in Mosul in the future.
Dan, thank you very much. Maria, will you speak to that? What about the government getting even basic supplies out to its fighters? Is it ready for this?
Well, I think that the most challenging element of this operation is truly that one of the military coordination between all this mosaic of forces which are participating to the campaign. So you really touch on the right point. I think that even if some of the special forces, especially the counterterrorism, which is special forces within the Iraqi security forces, might have the professionality to lead the fight, take on the fight, there is still a big problem in the coordination, especially between the coordination between the central government and the Kurdistan regional government. However, the U.S. have put great pressure to coordinate between Masoud Barzani and central government in Baghdad before the battle started. So let's see how it goes. But if that sort of very fragile link breaks politically, then also militarily, it will be really a big problem. So I think that we really have to hope that that liaison between Barzani and Abadi will continue. Otherwise, we might foresee that other regional players might play a greatest role in the battle, chiefly Turkey on one side, which is supporting also the Barzani, and on the other side, Iran. So I think it's very important to keep this battle Iraqi, but to do so, you need a strong strong alliance between Barzani and Abadi.
Dan, thanks so much for the call. I'm Jane Clayson. This is On Point. Ruel Marcaret, what about the other regional players that Maria talks about, Turkey and Iran specifically? How do they play into this? Are they angling to get a piece of this this offensive?
Well, I mean, the big troublemaker is certainly Iran, the Islamic Republic. I mean, they have been actively sowing sectarian tension, internecine strife since 2004. They have benefited enormously from this sectarian war that has broken out, particularly since the Americans withdrew in 2011. They will continue to encourage, I think, sectarian strife in the country. So whether you can check that is extremely difficult. It's certainly going to be hard, if not impossible, for the Iraqi Shia government, which is opposed to Iranian mischief. And I think Abadi, Prime Minister Abadi, is that he would like to see the Iranian role inside of Iraq greatly diminished, as would many Iraqi Shia. But it's going to be very difficult to check them, and the Americans are not in a strong enough position to do so. The Turks, you know, I think the Turks, the primary Turkish focus is on Syria and the Syrian Kurds, who are essentially a wing of the PKK, the Turkish-Kurdish terrorist organization that has driven the Turkish army nuts for decades. There's a more of a modus vivendi that exists between the Iraqi Kurds and the Turks. They certainly have their disagreements. The Turks can send in the army and intrude, and the Kurds don't like it. But I think for the most part, they will keep their distance from what's happening there. And the number of Turkomans who are in northern Iraq, I mean, that number, I think, has shrunk significantly in the last several years. Most of them have moved out. So I think the ethnic factor there for the Turks is less than it used to be.
And so, Maria Fantapi, what is the backup plan for the U.S. specifically should regional players, especially Iran, become even more involved in what's going on in Mosul?
Absolutely not. I mean, for the U.S., from the U.S. perspective, their role so far has been that one of really trying to give confidence and build confidence also between Iraqi players, chiefly the Massoud Barzani in Iraqi Kurdistan and the central government of Abadi. I think that from the U.S. perspective, there is a great fear that that this regional player are going to step in, because if, for example, the popular mobilization, the Shia militia, are going to step in and have a great role in the campaign, then also Turkey-affiliated forces are going to be willing to step in the campaign. And then you might have a problem in really having even clashes between these two regional powers. So basically, I think that what is the most delicate step for the United States at this moment is to be really the manager of this Iraqi security forces and Peshmerga, and try to keep at bay the regional player. It will not be easy, and I think that so far we are in the first phase of the campaign, where still we don't see much of this regional player stepping in. But while we are going to approach the city more, then we might also have to face this sort of problem with the popular mobilization, the Shia militia asking for having a role, and Tayyip Erdogan responding to them. And so we might incur really in a sort of snowball effect that will make Mosul a sort of regional hub of tension. We don't have to really go down that path, because otherwise, instead of solving a problem, we are going to create a new problem.
A delicate balance, for sure, Ruel Marcaret, a U.S. being a manager of all the forces over there, and this, of course, just being the first phase of what we're seeing of what's to come.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think we're going to be able to manage a lot with 6,000 troops.
Right.
This is ultimately about hard power. We can have more influence with the Kurds, because the Kurds always want the Americans to support them, particularly if they decide to take that final step to go for an independent state. So we do have influence there, but the influence that we have in Baghdad is quite limited now, because our forces are small and our willingness to deploy them is perhaps even less. So I'm skeptical that the United States is going to be able to serve as a balancer post-Mosul.
We are discussing the battle to retake Mosul this hour, and you can join the conversation. Even if Mosul is retaken, what happens next? Who governs? Or is there a chance here, an opportunity for different factions to patch things up? I'm Jane Clayson, in for Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.
Support for On Point and the following message comes from Blue Apron, providing pre-portioned, fresh ingredients with easy recipes delivered to your door. Check out this week's menu and get three meals free with free shipping at blueapron.com/onpoint. Blue Apron, a better way to cook.
This is On Point. I'm Jane Clayson, and for Tom Ashbrook, we're looking this hour at the big new offensive to retake Mosul and what happens next. Here's an interview with Reuters posted yesterday, a soldier in the Kurdish Peshmerga forces speaking about their victories just outside of Mosul.
Thank God we entered the area and we gained control over most of the land. The Peshmerga forces were victorious despite the brutality of the war. We gained control over 10 villages, which we are cleansing.
You can join the conversation, listeners. What's the best outcome here? What is the worst? Great guest this hour, Maria Fantopi, Iraq senior analyst for the International Crisis Group, and Ruel Mark Garecht, senior fellow at the Foundation for Defense of Democracies. Just cross the AP wire here. Word about civilians coming out of Mosul. An aid group says thousands of Iraqis are fleeing to Syria in order to escape the fighting around Mosul. Save the Children says 5,000 people have arrived in the camp just in the last few days. 1,000 more are waiting at the border. The group says the camp has only 16 latrines shared by more than 9,000 people, and many only have access to dirty, untreated water. Let's get some callers in here. Darius in Woodland Hills, California. Darius, welcome to On Point. Hello.
Hi. I just have a quick comment. You know, I was born in Iraq. I was born in Baghdad. And one of the, kind of annoying things that I always hear is, you know, when the Shiites or the Iraqi military goes into this town, the hope is that the Shiite militias will behave. Every town that they've taken back from ISIS, that's been what's been talked about. And now Mosul, well, if the Shiites behave after they take Mosul, then maybe there'll be peace. But, you know, from my history, from what I've seen, Sunnis never needed a reason to kill Shiites. During Saddam's reign, I mean, even outside of Iraq, from Pakistan to Turkey, with Wahhabi being exported, the whole philosophy is about killing Shiites. They resent Shiites in any position of power. Mm-hmm. You can compare the African-American experience here 100 times worse than the African-American experience here.
Darius, thank you. There are very real concerns, Ruel Mark Garecht, about all of this aggravating tensions between the Sunnis in Mosul and the Shiite-dominated government in Baghdad that fueled the Islamic State's rise in the first place. I mean, how do you see, to Darius's point, political power-sharing arrangements between the various groups unfolding and continuing, really, after all this is over?
Well, first, I'd like to say the caller is right. I mean, the Iraqi Sunni community under Saddam was unbelievably ferocious and savage towards the Iraqi Shia community. And I think after the fall of Saddam, the Iraqi Shia community, certainly the clergy, was willing to give the Sunnis the benefit of the doubt that they too had suffered awfully under Saddam. And that that doubt evaporated with the war that was started and waged by the Sunni revanchists. However, since then, certainly the Iraqi Shia, particularly the more radical elements supported by the Iranians, have tried to get even. And Prime Minister Maliki was certainly not an advocate of a reconciliation. So you have a real problem here. You have a majority Shia population and you have a Arab Sunni minority, which is probably around 20%. Mm-hmm. And you have to try to work out a means where, you know, they don't end up killing themselves. I think you actually probably still can do that. It's going to be very, very difficult. However, I don't see a way of doing that without a much greater American presence, an American middleman, a check. Obviously, the Iranians want no part of that. And so if the Americans attempt to go in that direction, if they were they will come up against Iranian resistance and radical Iraqi Shia resistance. So it is a difficult situation. The Obama administration has not wanted to go there. It has reintroduced more troops into Iraq. We're back up, as I said, to around 6,000. But they have not been actively used in combat, and there's certainly not yet a political check on the worst forces in Baghdad.
And so, Maria Fantapi, how does the battle, to Ruel's point, for Mosul test the Obama administration's strategy to shift the combat burden from U.S. forces to Iraqi forces?
Well, the, I think that this anti-ISIL campaign, in a way, it has been coherent in the fact that it has used these local security forces in order not to deploy U.S. security forces. Now, this strategy has its own advantages because you don't deploy U.S. forces on the ground, but it also has its own disadvantages because you end up empowering different militias or different local groups, and then they will claim more political power, they will claim territory, so on and so forward. So I think that the right balance here is in, okay, not deploying maybe more U.S. troops, but at the same time really trying to be more influential politically. So the U.S., I think it should really try to find a good balance between and try to find a good equilibrium in using also some sort of political leverage in order to be more of a sort of a manager. This doesn't need more troop on the ground. It just needs more engagement politically in managing the situation.
More engagement politically. I mean, Ruel, critics say President Obama's approach in Mosul in Iraq is an example of leading from behind. I mean, do you agree? And if Mosul, if the operation there is successful, does that by some measure vindicate Mr. Obama?
Well, I would say he certainly hasn't been leading from the front. I mean, we'll have to see how this battle unfolds. And again, you have at least two parts to this. You have the actual battle, and then you have what comes after. If we're really lucky, then the Islamic State forces in Mosul will collapse. Civilian casualties will stay low, and the Iraqi Sunni, Arab Sunni, Shiite, and Kurdish tensions won't go won't catch on fire. But I have to say I remain skeptical that this is going to be the outcome, and I think what's most likely is that the Islamic State will fall in Mosul. However, post-battle, you will not have the type of political reconciliation necessary. And I have to say, once the guns come out, it is hard power that matters. Mm-hmm. Political influence flows from hard power. So unless the Americans are willing to exert more of themselves to play a much more active role in Iraq militarily and thus politically, I don't see this going particularly well. I see more internecine strife down the road.
Let's get Christopher in here from Austin, Texas. Hi, Christopher. Thanks for waiting. Glad you called. Go ahead.
Hello, Jane.
Hi.
I was kind of hoping that maybe, and this could solve a few problems, is once, and this is a win, not an if, once we resolve Syria and Iraq, I was wondering if your panel would support an independent Kurdistan.
Hmm. Okay. What about that? You first, Ruel, Mark Garrett. I mean, everybody wants a piece of this. What about an independent Kurdistan?
I have to confess I'm of two minds of this. I mean, I have been to Kurdistan, Iraqi Kurdistan a few times. I certainly think that they have earned the right to self-determination. It isn't de facto already happened. It's culturally happening. The study of Arabic is in sharp decline throughout Kurdistan. The study of English, for example, is exponentially increased. Essentially, you already have an independent state. Whether, the timing for them to take that extra step, whether that would produce more trouble than it's actually worth, that's a more complicated question. But I would I think the most important thing to realize is de facto it's already happened. You do have an Iraqi Kurdish state, and it is an issue that the Iraqi Shia, Arab Shia community hasn't fully accepted, but they also probably are unprepared to go to war to stop it. It really depends on whether they can reach an agreement on Kirkuk and lands that both parties lay claim to.
Quickly, Maria Fentepi, independent Kurdistan aside, to the caller's point, how do you break up Mosul after all of this is over?
Well, certainly, I mean, the problem is that we started this campaign and we know how it started. We don't know how it ends. So the issue of the political management of the city is certainly the most uncertain one. And the political settlement in the city will shape as far as the campaign is also unfolding. So depending on which are the forces who are going to participate into the campaign, then you will have different sort of scenarios. So I think that also from the U.S. perspective, whether this will be success or not, it will really depend from the capacity of the U.S. to, in a way, being flexible and adapt from situation to situation in the next few days or weeks. So we have, for the post-military phase, we have different scenarios. We have the best scenario and the worst scenario. The best scenario see Sunni local forces from the city managing the city from within, and Iraqi Kurdish forces staying and Iraqi Shia militia staying on the outskirts, while some of the Iraqi special forces managing the situation from within the center of the city. You have a worst-case scenario where you have a sort of division within the city in security pockets, in which the Kurds have influence over one area, some districts. The Shia militia will enter and they will have influence over another district, a sort of Berlin post 1945. And of course, we don't want this scenario, because this scenario will mean that really Mosul will become a hub of regional and local tension.
I'm Jane Clayson. This is On Point. Let's go back to the phones now. Mike in Sudbury, Massachusetts, is on the line. Mike, welcome.
Hi. Thank you, Jane.
Yes.
My question and my comment are one and the same, I think. I don't understand why we in the United States would want our young men and women, mothers, daughters, brothers, sisters, to die in countries that have been fighting amongst themselves as far back as time. There's never been any kind of solution, whether it was European invasion, the English, the French. It has never worked, never will work. I just don't understand the madness of sending our young men and women to die over there. We are damned if we do. We're damned if we don't.
Well, there are no real boots on the ground, Mike. Thank you so much for the call. In this offensive, Ruel Mark correct, but is it possible that U.S. forces in some form make their way into Mosul with Iraqi forces before this thing is over?
Oh, I suspect they will. I mean, I think you will have special forces in there pretty quickly. I would say this. I mean, President Obama certainly agreed with the caller in 2011, and we now have 6,000 U.S. troops back in Iraq. So I would say that he certainly came to the conclusion that that his original decision was a mistake, and that they had to send forces back there. I would just add on just a quick historical note. It is false, actually, to believe that the Sunni and the Shia have been at each other's throats for centuries. That's actually not quite true. There have been issues between the two communities, but the notion that there has been unending warfare for millennia is simply historically false.
Ruel, do you agree with Maria's assessment, the best case and worst case scenarios, the best case being Iraqi security forces sort of maintain control of Mosul, worst case scenario, outside regional forces sort of press for a role in this campaign, and that would really complicate things? Do you agree with those two assessments?
Yeah, I mean, I think the certainly her description of what would be the best case, I agree with. I, I mean, again, I think that, I mean, the whole area around Mosul is overwhelmingly, you know, Iraqi Arab Sunni area with the Kurds in the north and the east. But I'm skeptical that it's going to work out that way. I don't think you're going to see that type of federal arrangement. That would be a good idea, and I think it would be a good idea for much of Iraq in general to have less centralized authority. But the history of modern Iraq goes the other direction, for no other reason, because of the bloody oil. So, you know, again, I'm skeptical they're going to work out a modus vivendi when there are so many forces, particularly now on the Shiite side, because of the very large influence of Iran, that is going to allow for some type of reconciliation. I think that the Iranians will once again try to ensure that there is tension, that there is strife, because it enhances their position and makes them stronger inside of the Iraqi Shia community, where their historical position has actually been pretty weak.
Stirring things up. Iran stirring things up. Maria Fantapi, I'll give you 30 seconds here, sort of a last word. How do you see all this ending, this new offensive in Mosul?
I think that the U.S. will be really the key players into this. Even if they have not a lot of presence on the ground, they will be really key in ensuring that that this battle will remain an Iraqi battle and that the regional powers will stay at bay from it as much as possible. So both through their presence, but also through any other leverage, both political and also economical. Let's not forget that there is economic leverage. You can also use the reconstruction funding in a way to give guarantees to some regional player that their interest in the city will be secured. Okay. So I think that we have to wish that after the military phase, then there will be also a political settlement among Iraqis and also among regional players and the U.S.
Mm. Ruel, I'll give you the last word. Give us a quick timetable for this offensive. Weeks, months?
Months, probably.
Ruel Mark Gerecht, Senior Fellow at the Foundation for the Defense of Democracies. Thank you so much. Really appreciate your time today.
My pleasure.
And Maria Fantapi, Iraq Senior Analyst for the International Crisis Group. Maria, thanks to you.
Thank you for having me.
I'm Jane Clayson. This is On Point.
On Point is a production of WBUR Boston and NPR.